Well,
guess what? Hey, Sammy gets to join into the awesome, super awesome homeowners club. Everybody, round of applause for Sammy.
Yay, homeowners club. And I've already got problems to deal with.
Great. I hear. Did you have you showered yet?
Yes. Okay. So yeah, yes. The water problem got fixed, but now there's another sort of water related problem. It's like water adjacent. It's flood problem, basically. Like nothing's flooding. So it's not that, but it's about like flood insurance, because down here in the South, like especially in this part of Mississippi, they got flooded by Katrina really badly. So every home that was in a flood zone needs flood insurance now. Now, granted, my house is an elevated house, so that means it's up on stilts that are like 12 feet off the ground. So my house is literally like a tree house.
Yay! You have a clubhouse! I know. It's so cool!
But so that means my flood insurance is really low. It's like $415 a year, which is very, very low. But
smart cookie.
Right. But there is a screened-in patio under my house. And the insurance agent is trying to say that I have to claim that as livable square footage because it's a screened-in patio, and that unless I install flood venting in it, I'm going to have to pay more insurance to insure the square footage of livable space under my house. It's literally like a screened-in gazebo under there.
Like water passes through screens,
exactly,
guys.
Exactly. Like it's got like a foot of plywood at the bottom, you know, for the screen to set in, and then two screen doors. And I said, aren't the screen doors venting enough? Well, no, they're not. And they're worried about, you know, if it floods, that'll get up into the house. I'm like, if it floods more than a foot and a half, it's going to go venting out the sides of the screen that's all the way around. But, you know, so they're being super difficult. And my real estate agent is really upset. Like, she's like,
ooh, I bet she is.
Oh, she's mad. Like, she was like, I went out on a limb and, you know, I usually use a different insurance agent, but I used this one this time and he's going to screw me and my client after he's already closed on the house. I don't think so. So she's mad. Ooh, she's really mad. Because it's not livable space. You know, it's not like it's insulated. No. It's not like it's heated or cooled. It's literally a screened patio. Yeah. But they're trying to claim that it's since it's permanent fixture, that it's livable space and I have to get it flood insured. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Bizarre. So,
oh my gosh.
Yay,
well,
home
at least
ownership.
You showered.
At least
you're
I showered.
Clean.
Oh yeah, that story. Yeah, my water got shut off randomly. Like I got everything moved over to my name and then they shut my water off. And I was like, why is my water shut off? And I called them and they're like, well, did you pay your bill? I'm like, I just moved into this house. I don't have a bill yet.
Give me some time, guys. You're rushing me.
I moved everything into my name. I did the right proper procedures, turned my water back on. And this was at 11 o'clock at night that I figured it out. And they had like an emergency on-call number. So that was who I called. And they, you know, after confirming like 5 times that I didn't have a bill to pay, they were like, oh, well, we don't turn water back on at night. I was like, so what's the point of an emergency on-call number? But I'm assuming that an emergency is more like a water main's broken, hey, somebody's water got shut off. So I'm willing to be a little bit lenient about that. However, they said they'd be back first thing in the morning, or that they'd come by first thing in the morning. I called at 7:30, which is when their office supposedly opens. And they didn't pick up the phone. And then I called at 7:45 and they didn't pick up the phone. And then I called at 8 o'clock and they still didn't pick up the phone. So I finally just called the emergency after hours number and said, hey, nobody in the office is picking up the phone. Can you send somebody out? And they're like, oh, we see you called last night, but they didn't put any notes down.
I was like,
oh my God. So what? I told them I needed them to come out and turn my water back on. Okay, we'll get right on it. An hour goes by, nothing. So I go to the office, which is a mile from my house, with bedheads still in my pajamas. And I'm like, I can't take a shower for work. I can't go to the bathroom. I can't do anything. Can you turn it back on?
Karen'd the heck on up in there. Oh my God.
I totally Karen'd them. I really did.
Oh my God.
So they're like, okay, well, let me look into it. She pulled up the work order and said, oh, it's still pending. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm the first work order of the day. How am I still pending? But so she's like, I'll make sure that you're a priority. So I went and made sure that they noticed that I was using their bathroom because I had to pee and I can't pee at home. So I used their bathroom and then went home. And then another hour and a half later, they finally showed up and turned my water back on.
Well, you're looking good now. You're on the right track.
Yay, homeownership.
Yay.
So, and then all week I've been packing and unpacking, and I drive a Miata, so it's like I can't fit much in my car. So it's kind of
multiple
small trips back and forth. One day I rented like a U-Haul truck just to bring some stuff over, like a bigger trip. And then tomorrow I'm renting an actual U-Haul van and getting like some of my friends to help me load up my like bigger furniture that I couldn't do myself. And over tomorrow. So hopefully tomorrow I will actually have everything in my new house.
Yay, and then I can start, you're almost there. You're so close.
And then I can start setting up my office so that I actually have a recording space instead of the little hobo studio that I posted online.
So bear with us, guys. It's just for one episode.
So that has been my life. What have you been up to?
Oh my gosh, don't even ask me that. We're getting ready for Halloween. It'll be the same thing for the next like several weeks and stuff. As of right now, let's see. It'll be October 1st the time this broadcast.
Happy Spooktober.
Yes, and Ian's birthday is on Sunday, so we're
happy
celebrating
birthday,
this
producer
weekend.
Ian.
So very exciting, so yay, happy birthday, babe. And so that's kind of like what's been on our mind this week. And just kind of preparing the house for the, fall and winter season. So
exciting.
But yeah, we're feeling good. Java the Bean's, feeling good, and everybody's happy and healthy and yay, positive.
Oh, good. Yeah, my kitties are doing all right. They took like a couple of days to adjust to the new house, but they're back to their old obnoxious annoying ways, so they're doing great.
Of course. So yeah, well, great. Well, yeah. Hey, let's flip a coin for a penny for our thoughts.
Yes, let's do
this.
Because
the people came for conspiracies and cryptids. Give the people what they want.
They did not come for this long intro.
So let's see, who picked heads or tails last time?
Remember. I think it was you.
Was it me?
I don't remember.
Go for it. You pick it this time.
Okay. Let's go with heads.
It's heads. Go for it.
Nice. Okay, I get to go first this time. You've gone first the last couple of times. Yeah. So. Okay. So today I'm going to be talking about a cryptid that kind of skirts the line between conspiracy and cryptid, but don't worry, I'm not going to step on your toes, Tess. Just in case.
I'm going to step on yours a little later.
But
as you dance with me, honey.
Oh, I'll dance, but I have two left feet, so.
Oh. Oh, what a coincidence. I have two left thumbs.
So,
on my right hand.
On your right hand. Oh, God.
Figure that one out.
Oh, God, no. Were you near like a toxic waste dump as a child or something, or in the womb?
You don't know my life.
But just in case you talk about this at some point, which I'm hoping eventually you will because it's a great conspiracy. But today I'm going to be talking about the cryptid known as the Lizard Man of Scape or Swamp. So now just clarifying, this is only one specific lizard person, not lizard people or reptilians as a whole, which is where the conspiracy gets in. This is just specifically one lizard person.
Excellent. I like it. Let's go for it. So let's dive in.
And I know that it's called the Lizard Man, but once, as usual, we don't really know the gender. It's a lizard person. So, but for the sake of what it's named, I'm going to just refer to it as a man. So,
Lizard Man
of Scape or Swamp. So the Lizard Man is 7 feet tall. He's a big boy. He's got three-toed hands and feet with circular pads on the tips of the fingers and toes that allow it to climb walls and trees, you know, kind of like a gecko.
Yeah, hecko gecko.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your cryptid insurance.
You might want to invest. Hey, if you got flood insurance, you might as well.
I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe I should invest in cryptid insurance. There are some Mississippi cryptids that I don't want up in my backyard. So, yeah.
Bundle your home, auto,
and cryptid insurance.
And cryptid insurance.
He has green, scaly skin. He's extremely fast and powerful and has glowing red eyes, which I don't know if you've started to notice a pattern in cryptids, but 9 times out of 10, they have glowing red eyes. So that just, that seems to be a real
noticing a
staple.
Theme.
Yeah, that's a theme. Yeah. So the first sighting comes from fall of 1987, which is the year I was born.
Oh.
I know. Long time
ago.
It's
your fault.
It is my fault. So this sighting comes from a man named George Holloman Jr. He stopped for a smoke break near a stream while riding his bike around Scape or Swamp when he saw what he had thought was a log standing upright. It turned out the log was a reptilian humanoid that stood about 7 or 8 feet tall and had glowing red eyes, and it just stood there staring at him until a car passed by and made it run off into the surrounding woods.
So he's, just standing there like squinting like, Is that a log?
Why is that?
And it's like,
and it's
7 feet tall.
And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, that log has glowing red eyes. And it's, and they just kind of stared at each other, you know, him puffing on his cigarette until a car passed by and scared it off.
Zoinks.
Zoinks, indeed.
That's what I have to say about that, yes.
The next sighting comes from June 29th of 1988, and it is the most well-known sighting to date. 17-year-old Christopher Davis was driving home that evening on a back road through Scape or Swamp, which is near Bishopville in South Carolina. So I forgot to mention that's where Scape or Swamp is South Carolina area.
Hmm.
Which there are a lot of cryptids in that West Virginia, North and South Carolina, just that real like
wooded now.
Kind of, no offense, but backwater part of the country.
Sammy's words.
Please forgive me, listeners. I'm sorry. So
for once, Sammy's offending people.
I know,
and not
I'm
me.
Offending people for once. It's my turn. So he was driving through like the back roads outside of Skateboard Swamp when he got a flat tire. He was swapping it out for a spare when he heard a thumping noise behind him. He said, I looked back and saw something running across the field towards me. It was about 25 yards away, and I saw red eyes glowing. I ran into the car and locked it. The thing grabbed the door handle. I could see him from the neck down, the three big fingers, long black nails, and green rough skin. It was strong and angry. I looked in my mirror and saw a blur of green running. I could see his toes, and then he jumped on the roof of my car. I thought I heard a grunt, and then I could see his fingers through the front windshield, where they curled around the roof. I sped up and swerved to shake the creature off. So basically, he gets in the car, like he swaps out the tire, hears this thumping, sees this giant lizard coming towards him, jumps in his car and locks the door, and the thing is like trying to get the door open. So he
scary, so he
takes off, and the like in his rearview mirror he sees it running towards him, and it jumps up on the roof of the car and grabs the roof of the car, and he can see that through the front windshield, and then he sped up and swerved trying to shake the creature off.
Ooh,
right?
Ooh,
that's terrifying. Ooh.
That's so scary. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a hard pass for me.
And like, I have a problem trying to pump gas at night. Like when I accidentally forget to fill up in the middle of the day when I'm going to work, and then I'm headed to work and I'm like, oh no, there's like 2 gallons of gas left in my car. I need to like go at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, please don't hurt me.
You know, there's
I'm like afraid of like crazy people, not lizard people. Now I got a whole new thing to worry about.
Got a whole new thing to worry about. Though this one's specifically in swamps. So I probably have more to fear than you do because I'm not too far from a swamp. So
it's true.
Apparently like I'm maybe about a mile from water, and apparently we have alligators and stuff, so maybe there's lizard people in there too. So
I'm sure there are.
Probably, yeah. So once Chris got home, he told his dad what happened, and his dad in turn told the Lee County Sheriff, Liston Truesdale. That was the sheriff's name, Liston Truesdale.
Listen here, Liston Truesdale.
You listened
here good.
You listen here, and I'll tell you the Truesdale. I'll leave. I'm done.
Just see yourself out.
So Sheriff Truesdale took Chris's report and also took note of the damage that was on his car, which included one of the rearview mirrors was broken off, and there were giant scratches on the roof of the car. So, yeah, like ripped the mirror off and also like put these giant gashes in the roof of the car, which is awful. So this damage was considered support for Chris's story, like actual evidence. And Chris also took a lie detector test and passed it. But we all know, at least most of us know, that lie detectors, you know, are not admissible in a court of law and are very unreliable. And if you didn't know that, you do now.
Exactly.
Lie detector tests are really unreliable. And I don't know why they always show, you know, like in TV and stuff like that, show people using them, because they're not reliable. And like I said, the results of them, they aren't allowed in a court. Because they're...
Yeah. I think they're just a visual crutch in TV shows and people just watch too much TV.
Yeah. But I mean, like, even, you know, even the government uses lie detector tests and it's like...
Oh, of course. Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I've never taken one, but sometimes for security clearances, you have to take a lie detector test. And it's like, but they're not accurate, like, at all.
Exactly. I could just be a really anxious person. Like,
yeah,
sorry.
Which is pretty much like any millennial. Hi, I'm
anxious. I'm not lying. I'm just panicking.
So Truesdale also noticed that the damage to Chris's car matched other damage reports that had been filed at the sheriff's office recently. So a short time after that report, two deputies from that sheriff's department went to the area and actually made plaster casts of the footprints that had the three toes found near the road. The three-toed footprints measured around 14 inches long, which that's a big foot.
Big handprint. Like,
that's
geez.
A big old foot. The deputies decided against sending the cast to the FBI for further analysis, though, because a biologist advised them that they were unclassifiable. A biologist was like, no, they're not going to know what that is because I don't know what that is. And I'm a biologist.
Well, as well, if you're a biologist, I would trust you.
So
trust your scientists.
Right. And then according to South Carolina Marine Resources Department spokesperson Johnny Evans, the tracks neither matched nor could be mistaken for the footprints of any recorded animal. And I actually have a picture of the two sheriff deputies with their plaster casts that I can show you.
Lay it on me.
So there they are. You've got sheriff's deputies Jim Talon on the left and Phil Stokes on the right display plaster casts of tracks found near the swamp where the lizard man was sighted. State wildlife officials declared the tracks as phony.
I'm totally Stokes about those large talons, I must say. Those are bizarre. But you know what they say about large lizard hands.
Large
lizard scales.
Oh, that too. I love you, Tess. So the next sighting was from a couple weeks later, July 14th of 1988. So this was 2 weeks after Chris's report. The Lee County Sheriff's Office got another report about a car being damaged, this time from couple Tom and Mary Wayne, not to be confused with Tom and Martha Wayne, who were Bruce Wayne's parents.
Naturally.
Right.
Wait, his mother's name is Martha too.
So's Superman's. I know.
Oh my God. What a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Another conspiracy.
But yeah. But literally the first thing that I thought of when I saw Tom and Mary Wayne, I was like, isn't that Batman's parents' name? And then I looked and I was like, oh wait, no, Tom and Martha. Never mind. Close though.
How dare you?
Very
Martha.
Close.
How dare you forget Martha's name?
So the side walls of their car were scratched and dented. The hood ornament was broken, which heaven forbid. The antenna was bent and wires from the motor had been ripped out. And it appeared that parts of the molding had actually been chewed as if an animal has used its teeth to inflict the damage. And there were also clumps of hair and muddy footprints all over the car.
Good Lord. It sounds like this guy like hit a deer and flipped his car and was like, I've got to come up with a better explanation than
my insurance.
Maybe it wasn't a
deer.
Maybe it was a rabbit. And he was like, I'm really embarrassed that like this happened because I hit something so small. I got to come up with a really, really good story.
Or he didn't have insurance to cover deer accidents, but he did have cryptid insurance to cover that. So he's like, well, my insurance won't cover a deer crash, but my cryptid insurance will cover lizard man, you know, ruining my car.
Bingo.
Once again, cryptid insurance saved the day.
Switching to Hecko.
Another few weeks later, on August 5th, 1988, Airman Kenneth Orr, who was stationed at Shaw Air Force Base at the time, claimed to not only have seen the creature near Highway 15, but he also shot and wounded it. He even had physical evidence in the form of scales and blood from the lizard creature. So he actually, he shot it and didn't kill it, but shot and wounded it, and then, you know, picked up some of the scales and blood, I guess, that were left over. I don't know.
Oh my God. Like, now, rude. Can you imagine going back and, like, collecting, like, you know, I'm sorry I shot you. I'm not going to help you, but I'm just going to collect a couple of things, and then I'll be on my way.
Well, I'm assuming it ran off, and he just kind of picked up scales and blood from where it was.
Valid.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
But he never made an official report, and he even went so far as to redact his unofficial report when he was charged with illegally carrying the pistol he used without a license. So basically, he didn't file an official report. He did file an unofficial report, but the sheriff's office was like, do you have a permit to carry that pistol? Nope. So we're going to charge you with it. Okay, I'm going to redact that report.
On second thought, I didn't say anything. You didn't hear that from me.
Right? Airman Orr was also charged with filing a false police report when he admitted that he had fabricated the entire sighting just so that he could keep people interested in Lizard Man.
I knew it.
Right? So it's like, basically, like, after a couple of months, a couple of months, interest in Lizard Man started to peter off. So he was like, I want to keep people interested. So I'm going to, you know, say that it's, you know, I shot it just to keep people interested. But it was because of this false account that a local radio station, WCOS, decided to offer a $1 million prize for the capture of the creature alive. However, because of this contest, false reports rose and real ones plummeted. In fact, there was even a sighting of a person in a lizard costume running around.
Of course. Come on.
Right?
Of course.
Ugh, I
People
love
are
it.
So, they're creative. They're sassy.
I'm just imagining somebody running around in one of those inflatable T-Rex costumes.
Like me at work, like a couple years ago.
Like, yes. You know, me at a convention a couple years ago. So, yeah. I mean, imagine if they had those kind of costumes, or if we took one of those costumes back then, it would easily be mistaken for a cryptid. Like, no doubt. Absolutely no doubt in my mind. If I went back to the 1980s with one of these inflatable Jurassic Park costumes and ran around the swamp, immediately sightings would go through the roof of the Lizard Man of Skateboard Swamp.
I think you could even leave the costume here. You just go. Just go
Are
be you.
Are you saying
babe.
I look like a
just
lizard?
Just go be you, babe.
Wow. That was really shady. I know that my, you know, hands are kind of dry right now from all the moving that I've had to do, but saying that I'm scaly and lizard-like, thanks. I really appreciate this.
Lotion.
That's the end of this podcast for the rest of forever. Thanks for listening.
And we're going to take a break while Sammy grabs some lotion. And
So anyway.
I'm just kidding. Continue, please.
Anyway. So the next sighting just comes from the 1990s. I don't have specific dates for the next couple of sightings, just years. And this one's just a decade. Like, it's just 1990s. Army Corpsman Robert Cooper filed a report that he saw a creature that looked half man, half dinosaur running next to his car. And that's all the information I could find about that sighting.
He was just like, hey, there's a beast over here.
Hey, there's some dinosaur man running around next to my car. And that's it. But, you know, the next sighting comes from 2004 or 2005, depending on which website you look at. A woman in Newberry, South Carolina, claimed to have seen two lizard-like creatures with glowing red eyes stalking around outside her home. Two of them. So now there's more of them.
Oh, gosh. Oh, right? They're multiplying. Yup.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess. Wasn't it Jurassic Park where the dinosaurs, you know, swap their sex from male to female in order to, like, fertilize their own eggs? So maybe that's what this lizard man is doing, is becoming a lizard woman, fertilizing its own eggs, and then hatching another lizard man. I don't know.
Anything is possible. Life, if lizard man is possible, that I'm sure is possible.
Life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
And the last sighting I have is from 2008. Bob and Dixie Rawson from Bishopsville, South Carolina, claimed that their minivan was mauled by a large creature that left huge scratches and heavy damage on the side of the vehicle and on the grill. They also reported that there was a dead cow and coyote nearby in a field. They even had blood samples from their car, but the blood samples proved to be from a dog, which really makes me worry that maybe they just hit a dog.
Oh, poor puppy.
Or maybe they hit the coyote. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, well, let's hope it was. Well, I don't want to say it's a lizard guy either.
Anyway, so explanations as to what the lizard man could be. Some people claimed that they think it might have just been a bear. Bears are big, powerful creatures with big, powerful claws that could easily, you know, rip apart a car. You know, they are 7 to 8 feet tall, sometimes taller. I don't know how they could get mistaken for a lizard, but, you know.
Or a log.
Yeah. Well, maybe a log. They're big and brown.
Sitting in the water, just thinking about stuff. Thinking about bear stuff. Fish and hibernating.
And honey.
And baseball.
And his best friend Piglet.
Yeah. Just like, and then all of a sudden he like stands up like, oh, that's not a log. That's
a bear.
Still thinking about bear stuff.
Anyway, other explanations are that it's living dinosaurs, which, you know, there are a lot of living dinosaur cryptids out there. You've got the Loch Ness Monster, Tahoe Tessie, the Mokili Membe from the Congo. Living dinosaurs are a very popular cryptid. So there's some thoughts that this might be one of those. Another thought is that it's aliens, which is kind of what the conspiracy about reptilians goes into, is that they're aliens. And then my actual favorite was that they are an evolutionary offshoot where lizards evolved along the same lines as primates. So, you know, like the whole theory of evolution is that primates, or, you know, like humanity evolved from like primate sort of genus. And this theory says that some lizards evolved along the same line, but just in smaller numbers than primates. And, you know, they're around, but not as prominent as humans are. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I thought that one was
very,
really cool.
Very few numbers. Interesting.
Yeah. So I thought that one was cool. But so yeah, anyway, that's the lizard man of Scape or Swamp. And I really like him it. And he's super cute and cool and terrifying. And I love him.
Well, I hope he has not been shot and hit by multiple cars. I hope he is alive and well and multiplying and doing his thing, because clearly he doesn't bother anybody necessarily, unless they bother him.
Sounds
like a lot of people hit him with cars, but he's not out, like,
except
for the
first
one guy. He was like trying to open the door. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Christopher
maybe he
Davis
had snacks. We don't know.
Maybe he was the snack.
Maybe. We don't know. The world will never know. Just like the what's at the center of the, or, well, we know what's at the center of a Tootsie Pop. It's how many licks it takes to get there.
Fun fact. I have actually, when I was in college, my friends and I did an experiment to find out an average of how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop. It takes a little over 1,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we did it very scientifically, actual sucking on the Tootsie Pop, like actual just straight up licks And it took a little over 1,000 on average. So, fun fact.
You're a special one.
I really am.
You're a national treasure.
I have a lot of free time.
Well, hey, let's give them some free time. Let's take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about my interesting conspiracy. Because I'm going to step on a little bit of your cryptid toes. Ooh, a little bit.
A conspirited.
Conspirited. So.
So. This it conspirated. Is
the conspirated. So it is Halloween movie season, or like, right? So
it absolutely is.
What's your first like go-to gotta watch it that's like
Hocus Pocus?
Of course.
100% Hocus Pocus.
That's how you get in the mood.
I will probably be watching that
today.
Once a day for the next month.
Exactly. And you should.
You absolutely should. So.
It's a classic. But there's also, you know, another classic is The Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That, oh my God, Tess, don't talk about this. So the classic, well, the classic mm-hmm. Invasion of the Body Snatchers movie, like the one from like mm-hmm. the early 1950s yep. that was in black and white.
I had to study it in college.
My parents had my brother and I watch that when we were like maybe 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, no.
I had nightmares. For like both me and my little brother had nightmares for like 2 months afterwards. I was terrified to fall asleep. I was probably the most sleep deprived like 9 year old you'll ever meet, because I was so terrified to fall asleep because they take over your body when you're sleeping. Yeah. In fact, yeah. one night, for some weird reason that I don't know to this day, as I was falling asleep, I broke out in hives. Huh. And I thought that I was being taken over, and I cried for like an hour and a half. To this day, I won't watch that movie. I haven't
Sammy
seen it.
Sammy is still crying. It wasn't for an hour and a half. He is still crying.
My brother and I still, we have not watched that movie again since that time.
Oh, wow.
We have that much trauma and PTSD from it.
We watched it in college, and I thought it was, you know, because it's, of course, I watched it as an adult, not at 8 or 9, you know,
right,
and stuff. But it inspired me. So we're not going to traumatize you again with real body snatchers. But I got kind of curious, and I was searching around, and I found I found a couple of things I want to share. This might actually be kind of a two-parter episode, because I found a couple that. I found three. We're going to talk about three, and maybe I'll do another episode of three.
Okay.
But they're people who seem to appear out of nowhere.
Okay.
They just show up one day, and maybe they disappear again. Maybe they stick around for a while and stuff, but we're going to talk about three of them.
Are we, like, talking about, like, celebrities that just kind of appear out of nowhere? Because, like, I'm sorry, but I had no idea who Lizzo was until like a week ago, and I don't know where she came from.
A week ago? Where have you been?
Maybe 2 weeks ago.
Oh my God. I've been listening to her like since the beginning of the year.
I am
like,
very out of touch, Tess.
Oh, Sammy. Why did you move across the country?
I do not keep up with the youths and youth culture. I listen to vaporwave and like retrowave music. So,
well, that explains our logo this season. we're not going to go for the more modern guys and stuff. These are going to be some more, I don't want to say ancient, but they're kind of more classic stories. In fact, the first one's going to come to us from the 12th century, like about 1134.
Oh, that's hard for me to even comprehend that year, but okay.
I know, right? This is like, I mean, think about like, you know, bring out your dead, like kind of Monty Python.
That's more like the 15th century.
You know what? You're right. So it's
further back than that. Middle Ages. This is like Dark Ages.
So go way back, like further. So, but there's a story that about the Green Children of Woolpit. That's our first little
group I've heard of. Okay, yes, so this one's neat.
This was our kind of like the first one that really inspired me to look into this. So these two, it's a boy and a girl. They were these green tinted children that emerged from the bottom of a deep trench that's used to trap wolves.
Okay.
The peasants that lived nearby grabbed the kids and hid them away. And like they knew something was up. They're like, these kids are green.
Mm-hmm.
Like this isn't natural. And they were a boy and a girl, and they were uncanny. They were like just really, really strange looking. And they had these striking, like, almond-shaped eyes, and were really, really underweight and had bright green skin. They were crying uncontrollably. They were sick and hungry, but they shied away from every, piece of food that was offered to them. They were like, no, until they were offered, green beans still in their husks. And the kids, ate them ferociously. They're like, oh my God, and just wolfed them down. And they lived on that for the boy lived on that for a couple of days. He eventually succumbed to illness and depression. He just wasn't used to this environment. Right. It was so strange for him. The girl, however, thrived and eventually lost her green hue. She learned how to eat real food. She learned English, and she was able to explain her origin to the public.
Right.
She told them that she was from a place where it was always twilight and everything was green and it was underground. That she and her brother were chasing some livestock from their place when they felt a gust of wind and were blinded by the bright light outside. They followed it and thus were found in the wolf trap and were unable to find their way back home. Mm-hmm. So they kind of basically broke through the bottom of this really deep trench and couldn't make their way back out. So they panicked, and some guy happened to be nearby and heard them. But this girl eventually started to look like a normal girl, was baptized, married, and she ended up dying in the village. And they were like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, good thing she was baptized.
You know, so as long as, you know, she's in a good place now. So that's what kind of, you know, that's probably the oldest version or one of the older stories of people just appearing out of nowhere. It was just like, where did these kids come from?
Right.
And we'll kind of get, I'll talk a little bit about what these stories could actually be toward the end. Is there explanations for each of these?
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorites, and we'll wrap up kind of what this guy actually did a little bit later. But on May 26th, 1828, a teenage boy appeared out of nowhere, limping in the streets of a German city. Mm-hmm. He was holding an envelope addressed to the 4th Squadron of the 6th Cavalry Regiment, Captain von Wessenig, in Nuremberg. And he was only capable of saying a couple of things, like his name, the word horse, don't know, and the phrase, I'd like to be a writer like my father was, but not in English. It was in Bavarian.
Right. Okay.
But it was in a dialect of Bavarian that even people that lived around there, they were like, is he saying what I think he's saying? Because even they didn't quite speak it.
Like an old English sort of dialect.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's crazy.
So over the next couple of years, at least for the maybe first year or so, the locals taught him German to try to communicate with him better. Eventually, he told them he grew up in a darkened cell that wasn't big enough to stand up in because he never stood upright or walked around, he walked with a limp. And I'm actually going to show you a picture of him. He's kind of an odd looking person.
Ooh.
So, yeah. See, this is kind of his.
Oh, he kind of looks like a Muppet.
A little bit.
I feel like that's mean of me to say,
but
he kind of looks like a Muppet.
So, but yeah, he's kind of strange. He's got kind of a strange stature, kind of already an odd guy all around.
Right.
So also one of the only toys that he had with him, he was found clutching a couple of things and stuff, was a horse. It was a little carved horse. So in the beginning, anything that made him happy or excited, he would just say horse. He would just start saying over and over and over again, horse, 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 and until he learned to speak. Eventually, the royal courts took an interest in him and locked him away until they could really get some answers. And apparently they opened the letters and read them, rude, they confirmed his story. There was the anonymous author said that the boy was given to his custody as an infant in October of 1812, and he had instructed him in the basics of reading and writing, but saying his prayers and stuff. But the guy had never left his house, so he had no social or communication skills. I know that feeling, guy. I don't have any social or communication skills either. I'm home a lot. So
I feel.
So the letter said that the boy would like to be a cavalryman, like his father, and invited the captain to either take him in or hang him, whatever. Literally, it said in the letter, you can either take him under the army or get rid of him. I don't care. Got no attachment to him. A shoemaker ended up taking him in.
and took him over to the captain. But the captain was like, I don't want him. And the guy, but the town was still kind of intrigued by this guy. They're like, well, we don't want to like hang him. That's kind of ridiculous.
Right. Let's,
like, we could put him to use. So he proved to be familiar with money. He could say his prayers and read a little bit, but he answered a few questions and his vocabulary was really limited. And because he provided no other evidence to his past, he was unfortunately imprisoned and then as a vagabond. They were like, ah, we don't really know what to do with you. So
you dirty vagrant, you're going to prison. Yeah. How dare you not have a home?
Yeah. So at first, I know, we still do that, too.
Like, we do, though. Like, I'm laughing, but it still really happens a lot, and it's super sad.
Sometimes it's like bank fees. It's like, yeah, there's nothing in your checking account, so we're going to charge the heck out of you.
We're going to charge you for not having any money.
Ugh. It's anyway, gross. I digress. That's okay, another conspiracy. But so at first it was assumed that he was raised in half wild in the forest. But after he learned some German, like I said, he explained that he lived in that darkened cell that was about 2 meters long, 1 meter wide, and 1.5 meters high, with only a straw bed to sleep on and 2 horses and a dog carved out of wood for toys.
Oh, that's
sad. He was later. I know, right? He was later adopted by the town of Nuremberg, and money was actually even raised for his upkeep and education. People like rallied together and were like, let's like really help this guy's like poor man.
Well, I guess they felt bad after putting him in prison. They're like, well, maybe instead of putting you in prison, we should have just put you in public school.
Yeah. In fact, actually, he lived with a local school teacher after a while for several years, and the guy did a bunch of weird homeopathic experiments on him with magnets. The article that I read on it didn't really elaborate, but they were like, yeah, it, like, if when I put this magnet on him here, he does this. And it was really strange. So the teacher kind of performed some strange experiments on him, but at least he was safe, I guess. But apparently they argued a lot. And
a small price to pay for, you know, room and board, you know, get magnetic, I don't know, magnetic experiments done on you. Okay.
In October of 1829, he didn't come to the midday meal, and he was actually found in the cellar of his house bleeding from a cut wound in his head. And he was said to be like, when they found him, they're like, what the heck happened? And he said that he was sitting on the pooper or he was in the privy, but he was on the pooper.
He was on the pooper. Yep.
He was attacked and wounded by a hooded man with a knife. So he like ran from the privy to his like bedroom, couldn't get away there, ran down to the cellar to go hide. And because there was like a blood trail all around the house. And but then the guy apparently disappeared. But he claimed that he recognized the voice of the man who attacked him as the guy who dropped him off in Nuremberg in the first place.
Oh,
yeah. So, because they were like, and apparently there was some prophecy that this guy needed to be murdered. And eventually he was. He was stabbed to death in 1833 at the age of 21. Isn't that strange?
That's so sad.
There's actually a huge conspiracy around this guy that's And actually, I'm going to, I really didn't want to give it away, but I think I will. So it's actually widely believed he's a con artist. Like, believe it or not, as most conspiracies will lead you to.
Yeah.
In this particular story, one of the letters that he was holding was allegedly from his mother explaining Casper's birthday and his father's occupation and death. Because it's like, if we didn't know who your parents were, how did you know your dad was a cavalry like rider, right? So, however, this was written in the exact same handwriting as the first letter, which also claimed that the boy writes in my handwriting exactly as I do, leading investigators to believe that Casper actually wrote both of them and that he was a fraud.
Yeah, so that's not how handwriting works.
Like, exactly. So it was like her handwriting was the same as his handwriting, as the same as the like caretaker's handwriting. So it was kind of like... So if we want to talk, you know, go back to the conspiracy of this, that, you know, he actually conned an entire town to pay for his upkeep and education.
Yeah, but at the same time, he didn't do a really good job because he got thrown in prison.
Temporarily. Then, you know,
and then, you know.
But for several years of his life, he ended up like pretty much like living large with this. I mean, arguing with the
until somebody tried to, you know, take him out on the crapper.
Exactly. You know? Well, actually, that's believed that he did that to himself. That he.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. So he it was like found out that he was actually more of a huge liar. So this one kind of fell apart. But the next one. So I'm going to share my screen with you again here. So they'll leave you with one more picture of this guy. This is what he looked like when he was around 21. So he went.
He still looks like a Muppet.
This. He does. Just a little bit. So, okay. So our next one. This one is very strange. I really like this one. This one is the man from Torrid. Okay. So I'm going to come back to this this picture in a minute. So I'm just going to leave this up for a sec.
I'm looking at the map and I'm trying to figure out where that is. Is that Andorra?
Yes, it is.
I know about Andorra from a stupid YouTube video.
Hey, so we're going to talk really briefly about this. So in 1954, a well-dressed, well-spoken, Caucasian bearded businessman showed up at the Tokyo airport.
Okay.
There were a few different ways that this story goes, but security wasn't as tight as it is then as it is now. So like eventually some airport official got a hold of his very, very weird passport. His passport was from a country that didn't exist called Torrid. It's like T-A-U-R-E-D, not like the plus size clothing store.
Okay. So, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. So when officials told the guy, look, buddy, your country of origin doesn't exist. He flipped out and was like, show me a map. Bring it to me now. Like, I'm going to show you. I have proof. He's like, listen here, bucko. The country of Torrid lies between France and Spain. See, he pointed to the country of Andorra and claimed that that's where Torrid was and where it existed for 1,000 years. And he proved he was even fluent in French, German, and Japanese. What this has to do with clearly, totally not fictionally country of Torrid, I have no idea. But the guy was smart. And his wallet also contained money from each region. So this is where it is. Like,
well, yeah. So Andorra is a principality between France and Spain. So it's not like a country per se, but it's kind of a country. Like I said, it's a principality. It's right between France and Spain. So it's like this itty bitty tiny country right there on the border of France and Spain.
Tiny tiny.
But yeah, so I know about that because like I said, I saw it in a stupid YouTube video and they're like, you know, we take every currency except for Andorra currency. Yeah, I don't know what Andorra is. Well, it's a principality between France and Spain. The people there are dirty. Oh. And that's what the line was. So.
That's funny. Well, but anyway, the teeny, 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 tiny, like, principality existed both in its exact size and everything, both here and in this guy's, like, reality.
Okay.
But he insisted it was not called Andorra.
So for him, it was called Torrid, but for us, it's called Andorra.
And that's where he was from. So officials tried to call his hotel in which he stayed and his workplace, but neither place had ever heard of him, and the bank on his checkbook didn't exist either. So, So officials booked him into a hotel room while they could investigate. And despite his exits being guarded all night, he disappeared. They went to go find him in the morning. He was gone. And then to make it even weirder, his checkbook, passport, and driver's license were also gone, but they weren't with him. They were in the airport security room.
No.
And they're just gone.
This reminds me of like an urban legend.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh. That's creepy, but this one's actually documented, where the urban legend that I'm thinking of is not. But this is actual documented that happened.
Exactly. Ugh, isn't that strange?
It gives me goosebumps. It's so creepy.
So, and there's a couple of explanations for that one, too. It's kind of obviously could be fraud, which is like if the 50s kind of seems a little early for that kind of fraud. But I mean,
fraud's been happening for, you know,
a long forever, time. Forever. So, but I mean, it's just kind
of part of human culture is fraud.
But this guy, like, part of what was so bizarre about the story was that this guy, his insistence that this place existed was genuine, was like, no, I am from here. What, you know, it was jarring. It was so believable that people were just so thrown by it.
Well,
so
for him to not just that, but for him to have all the documentation.
Yeah.
You know, to have like all of this stuff with him that, you know, proves who he is, but yet it doesn't prove who he is. It's it lends to the fact that it's like maybe he was telling the truth, but he's just from a different reality that kind of bled over into ours.
Exactly. So. Maybe he just crossed for a second, because like sometimes you can even like we've talked about in the I believe we talked about in the Mandela effect.
Yeah,
episode.
It was the Mandela.
You can walk into another
episode.
Room and you're you forgot why you walked in there because you're actually not in the same reality that you were when you walked in. So strange. Yeah. So strange. Yeah.
So maybe he like accidentally found his way into our reality and our Earth.
Maybe.
Ugh, that's creepy.
So I've got one more for you, and this is actually one that producer Ian actually reminded me of, and the more I read about it, the more I remembered. In fact, the more I read it, I was like, I don't remember if Sammy covered this one, so if I have, I apologize, but if not, you're going to help me with a little bit of Japanese.
Okay.
So in the 19th century, some Japanese villagers in the Hitachi province were greeted by a being whose ship appeared to be way beyond what was technologically possible at the time. Mm-hmm. According to the old scrolls, in the early 1800s, a strange ship washed ashore that was shaped like a bowl of rice or an incense burner. It was about 10 feet high and 18 feet wide, and it had glowing lights inside and was built with red sandalwood and metal. The top's windows were made of crystal, and it was really, really, really ornate and decorated with letters and characters that no one had ever seen. And it's commonly referred to as, Utsurobune. Is that right?
Sounds right. How's it spelled?
U-T-S-U-R-O and then B-U-N-E.
Utsurobune. Yeah, that's cool. That should be right. Yep.
Awesome. So I said it right. Yay. So according to the, let's see, people who peeked inside the window saw some provisions like water and cake and kneaded meat, candy, and this really plush carpeting. And no one really ever figured out what the carpeting or the material of like the bedding inside was made of. But I'm going to tell you why in a second, because it's very sweet.
Okay.
But so anyway, when they opened the ship, a young woman in her 20s emerged, and she was clutching a really strange wooden box. She was pale, with bright red hair and eyebrows with long white extensions, not on the eyebrows in her hair.
I was like, eyebrow extensions. That sounds
eyebrow
like
extensions. Can
that's,
you imagine?
That's going to be the next beauty trend. Eyebrow extensions.
But she was small. She was really tiny. She's less than 5 feet tall.
Okay.
No one was allowed to touch her box, no matter how kindly they talked to her. She was just like, mm-mm, mm-mm.
It's like Patrick with his special box.
Exactly. Exactly. I imagine if you, I don't want to know what you would happen if you pulled the string, though, because
it sounds a little
I imagine
creepy.
People were like, well, she's a little strange. She's a little odd. Because especially if you think about Japan, where hair is typically dark and coarse,
right?
And this
right.
woman shows up with red hair and these like white extensions, and she doesn't speak Japanese. It's like, where did you come from? And this like really strange capsule that just washed
right.
ashore
in this ornate rice bowl.
Yeah, that's huge. So the villagers thought it was probably best that the shoguns not see her. So they just kind of took her back out to sea and just kind of shoved her off. Okay. They're like, shoot.
You're creepy looking. Get out of here, crazy
yeah,
lady.
Exactly. So it's like, it's kind of sweet because it's like, we don't really know what to do with you. So I'm just going to kind of put you back where you came from, or so help me. But one villager was quoted as saying, the woman could be a princess of a foreign realm who married at her homeland, but when she had an affair with a townsman after marriage, it caused a scandal and the lover was killed for punishment. The princess was banned from home and before she enjoyed lots of sympathy, so she escaped the death penalty.
Okay.
It seems kind of bold to assume about somebody who couldn't speak your language and you
right.
only had for like maybe an hour before you sent back out to sea.
Yeah, that's making quite the that's really writing a fan fiction about
exactly.
some person you don't know anything about.
Exactly. But there actually are other documents about more sightings of this thing in Japan, and investigations were actually started again in 1844, 1925, and 1962. So it's kind of popped up a couple of times since then. And there's a couple of obviously possible explanations for all of these
right.
fraud Fraud. Also
maybe,
fraud.
And maybe fraud.
Fraud. like I said, Casper, fraud. The guy in the airport could have somehow passed through a parallel dimension where his country is different and somehow just ended up here. Maybe that story did happen, but it wasn't as sensational. The story has become more embellished as it's told over and over again by schmucks on the internet with weird podcasts.
Like us. Yep.
They could all be merely urban legends. There's also the ufological explanation. The legend of Utsurubune has been described as an early case of a documented close encounter with an alien based on similarities of the vessel from the Edo period and the 20th century descriptions of flying saucers.
Right. That's some ufologists. True.
Exactly. So, but some ufologists suggest this could have been a first sighting of an unidentified submarine object.
Oh. Aliens and the symbols coming from under the ocean.
Exactly.
Also, that's like, also terrifying because yeah, we don't know what's in the oceans.
I love the ocean. It's so mysterious.
It's so terrifying.
I'm so terrified of it. Yeah. But also the symbols that were reportedly found on that object regularly appear as addenda in the depictions of that rice bowl and stuff, and they are suggested to be similar to the symbols were reported at the Rendlesham Forest incident in England, which, and I normally don't do this because we usually don't share, but it's October and I want to. I'm going to cover it in the next episode. So we're going to talk about the Rendlesham Forest incident.
Okay, that's going to be awesome.
And so, that's what I have to say about people who appeared out of thin air.
Those are really interesting. Now, the green children I had heard about before. And in fact, I feel like I heard something recently that they've actually kind of figured that out. Like, that actually happened. That one wasn't fraud. That actually happened. And that they kind of, they actually figured out what could make people green like that. But I don't remember where I heard that. But I could have sworn
I'm sure if you, there's so many foods that if you eat enough of it.
Oh, yeah.
It can do strange things to your, like, your system. So,
well, I mean, just think about, like, flamingos, for example. They turn pink because of a specific kind of shrimp that they eat. And that's all that they eat. You know, so it's like that sort of thing can happen. But, yeah, I feel like I heard or read somewhere that that one has been proved real because it has happened since then.
That's so cool.
And then while we're on the subject of people appearing and disappearing, this is a conspiracy that I would like to talk about someday, or maybe you're going to talk about it someday, which is the disappearance of the entire town.
Roanoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely cover that. That's a good one. It's a really good one.
Super interesting. And I am equal parts fascinated and terrified by that.
Absolutely. You know,
and like the only thing that they had to go off of was the word Croatoan carved into a tree.
And so we'll definitely cover that one in another episode, because that's another one that's one of my favorites, because I actually really I had mixed feelings about that season of American Horror Story.
We'll talk about that in that episode.
I never
got to that season, but yeah. Oh, yeah. So good. Tess, you always do such a good job. And I love it.
I liked yours too. That was interesting. Lizard Man. We got lizard people. We got people peering out of nowhere. We got people hit by cars.
We got eyebrow extensions.
Eyebrow extensions. I mean, heck, what a party. You guys have ridden for a party for the past hour. Come on. If you guys don't have eyebrow extensions by the end of the week, I mean, what are we doing?
What are we even doing? God, now
do we have anything going on? We've got you know, all kinds of magic happening this month. And
yes, so aside from this episode and our 15th episode, we have, like we mentioned last time, we have an episode coming out on Halloween. So you guys are going to get like a twofer. You'll get, you know, October 31st and then November 1st, you'll get a regular episode. But
heck yeah.
October 31st, we have a episode coming out that's a true crime episode. It's gonna be very different from our normal spiel. It's a very kind of gory subject, so
yeah, you know, but we're gonna spook you for a little bit for Halloween. Yeah,
but you know, we are gonna preface that episode with kind of a, you know, a trigger warning, and if that sort of thing is not up your alley, we will not be offended if you skip that episode.
Really. But we hope you guys have a really great October. This is gonna be a spooky Spooky Halloween.
It's I'm so glad that it's finally October. Like, this is my favorite month of the year. Everything apple and pumpkin flavored is finally out in stores. I can wear jackets and leggings again, like nature intended.
So exciting. Yay, boot season. All right. Well, hey, that's one exciting thing. I got the best pants.
Oh my God.
They are my party pants. They're my strutting pants. Well, they are high-waisted.
Oh.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to go into fashion for a second because I'm so proud of these pants. They are pinstriped, high-waisted, butterfly bell bottoms.
Oh my. Okay, so when we post our pictures for this episode, we are going to need pictures of the high-waisted bell-bottom buttonfly pinstripe pants.
Oh, they will be posted.
Oh, good.
And yes, you guys are going to love them, because I do. So anyway, guys, we hope you guys have a really awesome week or 2 weeks. We will see you guys again in 2 weeks and all kinds of super awesome bonus content this month. And don't forget.
And thank you so much for listening. We can't forget that. So
yes. Thank you so much.
And don't forget.
Don't forget.
Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptipod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.